This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. The new year doesn't have to mean a whole new you. Sometimes it's just about feeling a little less burdened. And one thing, for instance, I'm working on is letting go of that constant pressure to have everything figured out. Like I need to be perfect or I am behind if I'm not. Therapy can help you identify what's weighing you down or holding you back by giving you an unbiased perspective so you can better understand your relationships, your motivations, and your emotions. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with a qualified therapist. Their therapists are fully licensed in the U.S. and work according to a strict code of conduct. They also do initial matching work for you so you can focus on your goals. You'll fill out a short questionnaire. With their experience and strong matching process, they typically get it right the first time. And if you're not happy with your match, you can switch to a different therapist at any time from tailored recommendations. BetterHelp makes it easy to get matched online with qualified therapists. Sign up and get 10% at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything: data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support, all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game. Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to Mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code Ravens at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
After the holidays, there's so much to clean up and get ready for the coming year. This leaves me exhausted and a lot of things falling off my to-do list. It's time to lock in, and Omaha Steaks delivers everything you crave to reset after the holidays. An order from them means having high-quality Omaha Steaks on hand at all times. I'm a big meat lover myself, and I always go with medium rare. But there's also plenty of poultry and other options available. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. Let Omaha Steaks deliver high-quality proteins right to your door. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to www.omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. Thanks to Omaha Steaks for sponsoring us.
Get ready, Ohio. FanDuel, America's number one sports book, is coming to the Buckeye State. And to kick things off, you can get started with $100 in free bets as an early sign-up bonus. Plus, when you sign up today with promo code OhioFD, you'll be all set when FanDuel goes live in Ohio. Then you can bet on all your favorite teams in all your favorite sports with $100 in free bets. Just download FanDuel's top-rated sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Ohio, this is your chance to get in on the action. Join today with promo code OHIOFD. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 or older and present in Ohio. Bonus issued in non-withdrawable free bets that expire 7 days after FanDuel accepts its first real money sports wager in Ohio, 1-1-23. Unique user identity verification required. Offer ends on the go live date. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification. And they're satisfying to scratch, no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now, that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Some cars are comfy on the inside, but don't have power on the outside. And some cars have the horsepower, but none of the comfort. I used to think there weren't any cars that were the total package. But that all changed when I got my Honda SUV. It's rugged and sophisticated. And right now, Honda has deals on the entire Honda SUV lineup. CR-V, HR-V, Pilot, Passport, you name it. So if you're looking for a car that's the total package, the only place you'll find it is at your local Honda dealer. Hurry before they're all gone.
All right, it's another film study. This is what you guys have been waiting for all week in this weird week where this show is coming out a little later than normal, but we finally get to talk about that exciting offense from Monday night. Ken McCusick, how you doing?
Life's good, Josh. Continuing this magic carpet ride. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Happy Thanksgiving to you and whoever else is listening. I believe this episode will be out on Thanksgiving or around Thanksgiving.
That's great. Thanks to all our listeners and people who read the website. We're very thankful for you in terms of you being there for us and enjoying the work we do. And we have another guest here today. My wife, Maureen, will be doing the offense with us tonight, talking a little bit about our trip to L.A. for the game. And also just, you know, taking you through the process of the scoring, the offensive line that we went through to put together this show for you.
Hi, everyone.
Hey, welcome, Maureen. I think this is your first time this year on the show, right? Or this season?
I did a preseason.
Preseason. Okay. All right. I don't remember. We've had so many guests in and out. It's been a lot of fun just to have a different person each episode to join us. You mentioned that you guys went out to L.A., and that's part of why our release schedule this week is odd, because the Ravens play on Monday night. You have to travel back and forth, and then you got to break down all the film. What does that do for the Ravens when they've got to play on Monday night, travel, have Thanksgiving where they generally try to give the guys off, or at least part of the day off, and get ready for a huge game on Sunday?
Yeah, I think they have to treat Thanksgiving as a regular practice day. I don't know if they'll cut practice early or because it's in the morning, it's not as much of an imposition. But they had a light workout today, is my understanding, after getting back to practice, after a travel day, effectively Monday night into Tuesday to get home. We felt it. I want to point out before we get too far into this, the Herculean efforts of Maureen to help get this, you know, the work done for this broadcast. So we're in LA in the hotel room. We stayed over from Monday until Tuesday night, but we had a 2:30 wake up call to make our airplane.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We didn't stay Tuesday night. We left Tuesday morning at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
And at 3:30, there was no traffic on the LA highway, which we were very excited about.
All right, so we got there early, but in just going back from the game, unfortunately, it's a 5 o'clock game out there at 5:20. We were back in the hotel room about 9, got the defensive personnel and some pass rush stuff done, all entered by midnight, so got a couple hours of sleep before we had to wake up and go to the airport. But anyway, long night.
How much film study on the airplane?
None.
Because, okay, took that off.
We don't have the power to do that. We have access to the internet, but we don't have the power.
Gotcha. I understand. Yeah, well, at least it was a fast game. As far as Monday nights go, it was a pretty quick game, so it got you out of there at a reasonable time. What was the how was the Coliseum? How was the? It seems like, well, besides all the bandwagon and jumping on the Lamar train, it seems like the Raven fans are traveling really well this year.
Yeah, they travel really well. What was interesting to me is walking around the LA area. A lot of people saw us with our jerseys on and they're like, hey, you came down for the game, really welcoming to us. And a lot of them were like, go beat the Rams. We don't like the Rams. So a lot of transient fans in the LA area.
Some Chargers fans, maybe some Raiders fans in the area. That's one thing the NFL has complained about, is that there are too many of those. You mentioned the Coliseum. I'll just I'll start a little bit. There's a Rose Garden you walk through. It's kind of a neat area, really kind of an accessible stadium from the train and whatnot, so fairly easy to get to. It's an old stadium.
Right, but it's also filled with like huge history stuff with Olympics and everything. It's got history that a lot of other stadiums do not have.
Very true. Very true. Maureen, how would you describe that, the stadium and the Coliseum itself?
It's an iconic place, and, you know, before the game, they light the torch, and all you can think of is, you know, the Olympics and your favorite person who lit a torch in the past. For me, it was Muhammad Ali. But, you know, those memories come to mind. And, of course, growing up watching USC, I'm expecting a white horse to come out at any moment, and it just never happened.
All right. Well, you taught me something there. I thought the torch was just always lit. I didn't know they did that pregame. I thought it just stayed lit all the time. But I understand what you're saying by it's an iconic stadium, because that's how I feel about the old Yankee Stadium before they teared it down. It's got lots of history. It's an icon. It's a dump. And old.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It doesn't have concourses, so you go outside, effectively go outside into the penned-in area to go to the bathroom. And it's not porta-potties. They have nice bathrooms out there, but they're not as many of them as you might hope.
Right.
And it is what it is. It's an older stadium. It's going to be replaced.
Yep. All right. Well, let's instead of thinking of old things, let's go with new things and Lamar Jackson. I mean, it's gotten to the point that he's not just a Baltimore phenomenon. He's like the face of the NFL right now.
And very I'm amazed true. At how much Lamar continues to improve each week.
Yeah. He's just been remarkable in that way, in terms of how he reads the field, how he is looking off defenders. Weddle got really badly looked off on one play in this game. He identified inside leverage. There's a great video out there by Dan Orlovsky, if you want to go take a look at that, that talks about how Lamar identified the perfect receiver in a five wide formation when only Willie Snead had the inside leverage on the defender. And it's very well done. And he really points out that that's something that most quarterbacks can't do without kind of giving away where they're going with the football. So really a nice video to watch. Talk a little bit about maybe ample time and space. Let's start with that. So Jackson had 9 of 22 ample time and space, 41%. Maureen, good number, great number. Where does that fit in with this year so far?
okay. I don't know.
fairly average number for 2019 anyway. Expected yards of 128 in the game. He actually had 160. One thing we're noticing is that he's beating Flacco's projected yards, which are based on Flacco expectations from 2010 through 17, pretty consistently, like a drumbeat every week. In this case, it was by about a yard and a half per throw. Just very good, consistently expectation-beating performances, though admittedly the expectation is set at a fairly low level.
I think Lamar took almost no chances with the football.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Did you say that?
Yeah, he really only had one out of his 20 passes, according to Next Gen, that was within 1 yard of a defender. So that's something you really like to see. I think I'd really like to see that anytime, but particularly with Lamar Jackson, where the offense is so good at producing positive yards and using four downs to get a first down, to take a few chances with the football is extra valuable under those circumstances. Probably want to talk a little bit about play action and what happened. The Ravens didn't do a whole lot of play action this game. They had been doing a lot more with Lamar, 14 out of, I think it was 20 dropbacks against the Texans, but only 6 out of 22 dropbacks were play action against the Rams. And if you wanted to pick one thing that really didn't work out well for the Ravens in this game, they only had 7 net yards on those plays, 1.2 yards per play. So it was a good thing that they didn't go with too much of it in this particular game. Now, that would tell you those other 16 throws worked out really well, given how Lamar performed in the game as a whole, and those included all of the touchdown passes. Average air yards per completion, 7.1. Per incompletion, 7.2. It's exactly what you want to see. Normally in the NFL, longer passes are incomplete more often. Shorter passes are complete more often. It's very unusual to have those numbers be so close together. So that's a good sign for Lamar. Another good one that feeds from that is his expected completion percentage. He, based on the throws he made, he should have completed 63.5% of his passes. He actually completed 75%. 11.5% over your expectation is terrific in terms of a differential. And we'll remember back that he had a 30% difference a couple of weeks ago in the perfect rating game, and he had a 26 in Miami, and those are the two highest of the entire football season. So 11 still very good.
Seemed to me like Lamar had a lot of arm angle variation. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, a lot of the short passes that were complete, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I agree. I think he was doing it, and it didn't look like he was doing it for show this week. It looked more like he was doing it to target passes effectively and did a good job with that. Lamar's on a magical run right now in terms of the last six games. He's completed 94 of 137 passes, 1,156 yards, 13 touchdowns, and no interceptions in those
six games.
Yeah. Quarterback rating of 126.1, and it almost seems like it should be higher, given 13 touchdowns, no interceptions. Four rushing TDs during that time. Just missed one in this game. Looked like we were unsure at the stadium if he was kind of sliding down or whether he was, what exactly he was doing, but he actually looked like he just slipped down, then tried to get up, and then Ramsey somehow stopped his forward progress.
Right, and the fact that he's hitting himself afterwards shows that he didn't mean to go down.
Yeah, that's what
it was. Or he didn't mean to get up after he went down. He meant to just roll into the end zone and be a touchdown.
Right, right.
That also would have worked, yeah. So no interceptions now in 151 passes. That goes back partway into that Pittsburgh game, which was his only really terrible game of the year when he had three picks. So been a hell of a streak here for Jackson, who started the year with a great interceptionless streak that stretched back to the middle of last year and now has another 151 going currently. I don't know about you. I don't have any words for the runs we're seeing each week. I mean, just they're spectacular, certainly, but there's something different about every one, and I'm just enjoying them as they come.
Seems to me like they converted virtually all their third and fourth down opportunities. Was that true?
Yeah. Let me go to the spreadsheet for a second here. Yeah, so they were 9 of 15 on third down, but they were also 3 of 3 on fourth down. So let's break that down a little bit. If they're 9 of 15 on third down, but then they get 3 out of 3 on fourth down, that's like kind of winning the rematch on fourth down. So they were really 12 of 15 in converting their series, is the way to think of it. And 2 of 5 of that was RG3. So with Lamar, they were 10 for 10 converting their third/fourth down sequences for a first down, including 7 of 7 on third down. Well, I'm sorry, 7 of 10 on third down, and then 3 of 3 on the ensuing fourth down. That's a little confusing, I realize, but they scored a touchdown every single drive.
You can't ask for more than that.
No, you can't.
Okay, so as we were going through the game scoring, I noticed that Stanley and Brown had very few negative events. Nope. Did that pan out for them?
Yeah, you're pushing us forward in the offensive line scoring, which is cool. We'll do that. Yeah, Stanley only allowed one pressure in this game. You probably remember that one where he had his hands on the face or on the neck of the defender. And I was really on the fringe of whether or not to give him a pressure on that play, but I decided to do it given he was getting away with the penalty on the play. He also had one false start in the game, an A, again, grade for Stanley, who's just playing terrific football right now. Let's go to the other side. And Brown, as Maureen mentioned, really wasn't allowing much in the way of pressures. He did have one that he allowed. He had two other partial QHs that he allowed, so a half of two quarterback hits. But in an amazing game for Brown here, he didn't have any missed blocks, which is really unusual for a right tackle at all and very unusual for Brown, who's a little bit of a lumbering right tackle. Didn't have to move too much into level two in this game, and that worked out for him. So He got another A, and he's effectively duplicated the same mid-level A several times this year. And I'm not sure whether it's four times or five times, but he's on a terrific run right now and just not giving up very much at all. We had a guest on the show earlier this year, Brandon Thorne, who made the point that there aren't that many good right tackles in the game, and the Ravens are very fortunate to have one with Brown.
I was devastated to see Skura being carted off the field in the first quarter, or early in the game. I don't remember if it was the first quarter or not, but do you know how he's doing?
Yeah, so the news came out today, and unfortunately he's lost for the year. They signed another center today who's got about 150 career snaps. He's in his fourth year. He played for Denver for three of those. So he is a guy that I don't even think will be active on game day. What I'm expecting to happen is for the Ravens to get their first activations out of Ben Powers, and he will probably just be the backup. Macari will continue at center. They already basically said as much. So they're not going to move Bozeman to center, which would have been the other possibility. And I expect Bozeman will continue at left guard since he had a real good game, in my opinion, in this one.
How did Macari do? Because they made a big deal about he hasn't played center since high school.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that. We'll do that first. So Macari went to California in the Pac-10. So it's a Power 5 conference, but it's kind of now at the bottom of the Power 5 probably. Or maybe, anyway, it's a Power 5 conference. Let's leave it at that. So he played left tackle despite having very short arms. Now, Macari is a tall guy. He's 6'4 and a half. So he's certainly tall enough to play left tackle even. But he's got Tyrannosaurus Rex arms, as Mike Mayock would say it, at 31 and a half inches roughly. And that's considered much too short. And we even saw some evidence of problems with that in the preseason. Of his arms really being too short to play even on the inside at the NFL level, where you have a lot of bigger men there. You have 6'6", 6'7", guys often even at defensive tackle that'll be playing there, or defensive end also. So anyway, in this game, he actually, I thought, held his own very well in terms of the run blocking. He did allow one pressure in the game, which was a straight up backed into the quarterback. I'm trying to see who did this here.
And there was one bad snap that was fumbled.
Was that his fault?
That was the bad snap that Jackson then picked up and ran, right?
Yeah, picked up and ran for a big gain. So it didn't end up being a bad situation. Macari had two holding penalties, though, in the game. And this is what's serious, and people are glossing over as if, oh, no big deal. You know, they didn't cost us, or they were both declined, is something often here. A holding penalty is a very serious event, and it's a serious score in my system because it's a penalty that carries option value. So it's minus 10 with no loss of down at the best, but it's worse if the offensive result didn't work out on the play. So, you know, then the defense has the option to not take that penalty. And in this case, there was a chop block on one of the plays. The other play, they didn't take it because I think there was a one-yard gain that was going to set up third and nine. So they were okay with it in both cases. They declined the penalty, but that doesn't mean that those penalties were okay. They weren't. Interesting situation there. In both cases, he was up against defensive tackle Greg Gaines, who's number 91 if you're looking at the video again. He's a guy who came out of school a few years ago, and I'm trying to remember what year he came out. Might have been last year, actually, and had very short arms himself. And his draft stock dropped considerably because of that. His arms are about 31 inches, and Macari's, you know, 31 and a half. So these are two very short-armed guys going against each other. Macari, and he locked onto his uniform, and the first one, he kind of pulled him to the ground. And Maureen, you made the point that the second one, did it almost look like there was some play acting going on?
Well, it looked like to me like he yanked him down from his jersey and they caught him for holding.
Right. So yanked him down for his jersey. I thought that was okay. But the second time, I thought as we were watching and doing the offensive line scoring, that you made the point that it looked like almost Gaines like saw an opportunity to draw another holding call and kind of went to the ground when Macari put his hands in the same position. So anyway, I'm not sure of it. You guys decide for yourself. Take a look at those video of those two holding penalties. But there might have been some savvy play from Greg Gaines on those to try and draw that hold.
Gotcha. See, I'm just sitting here focused on the 31 inches arm length. I've never thought of measuring arms. Now I'm going to have to go find a tape measure.
Here's the
31 inches is short.
It's a good idea. Josh, you're how tall? You're a fairly tall guy, right?
Yeah, my arms are longer than 34. I'm 6'4", so I've got longer arms.
Okay, so if you're 6'4", you should also have a wingspan of approximately 6'4". But you can measure that and see it works for most people.
So when you say 31, you mean as a single arm, not wingspan 31,
that's what he currently has, right? Yeah, but if your
wingspan
would show up as considerably shorter if you had a problem with arm length.
Gotcha.
Okay.
That has nothing to do with the Ravens. Well, a little bit because McCary has short arms, but besides that, it distracted me. But let's get back to it. We haven't gotten to Bozeman and Yonda.
Right.
We haven't gotten to Yonda yet. And I want to know who one of these guys had to be shutting down Aaron Donald, right?
That's definitely worth talking about. So let's talk a little bit about each of them, and then we'll talk about how they dealt with Donald in the game, because that's a special case. But Bozeman allowed three pressures in this game. Two of those were to Donald, and one he got PC'd, and it looked pretty bad by Brockers at the feet of Lamar. So he didn't have a great pass blocking game in any sense, but he did a very good job of run blocking, and he lost two plays to Donald at the line of scrimmage on run plays, but he won every other one, made 10 of 11 pulls. He had two highlight blocks, which was good. And since the Ravens ran a lot more than they passed in this game, and his pass blocking errors were not particularly significant, he still got a B+ for the game by my system. So a lot of Aaron Donald. He didn't get all of Aaron Donald, so I didn't give him the full maximum adjustment, but I gave him a pretty hefty adjustment positively. And this was Bozeman's best game of the season as I scored it. All right.
Yonda.
So no negative plays for Yonda. Only three missed blocks. Just a ho-hum, another A. I know when we score these games, Maureen will often get ahead of me in terms of the scoring. So I'll be kind of watching one player, and she'll be getting tired. And so she's already given Yonda a 1 and Brown a 1 as I'm going from left to right to give these grades out. And you know, we'll get to the point, and she'll go, well, I gave him a 1 up or 2, or I gave him a 1 or whatever to indicate what kind of block he made on the play. And anyway, this is a classic game where Yonda has very few misses. He played 58 snaps, departed early, and was replaced by James Hurst. Hurst did not have nearly as good a night. Hurst had some problems, including a sack allowed in a relatively brief outing of 14 plays here. And who got that sack off him? It was late in the game. Oh, you folks may have to go back and get this yourself. No, he was bowled by Brockers for the sack. Bowled then shed by Brockers for the sack. So not a great game for Hurst, but all the starters were good. And Macari, we're hopeful that he can clean up those holding penalties and move on to next week and be a valuable center, because that's going to be an area where the Ravens, they will get no mercy from their next opponent or from any future opponents, is in that left A gap between Macari and Bozeman trying to rush the passer there.
All right. Has Yonda locked up his Hall of Fame yet? Has he done enough so far? It seems like there's A after A.
Yeah, the A after A is not going to do it at this point. What will do it is longevity, Pro Bowls, All Pros, which he could get any of those this year. He could be All Pro again. He could go to the Pro Bowl. Be like to it. If they won a Super Bowl, I think that would certainly do it.
How many Pro Bowls does he already have?
He has, I think, 7 Pro Bowls, and he might have been All Pro twice.
Seven's not long enough. That doesn't give you enough longevity yet.
He's right in the middle. Longevity is really the years. He's got exactly the amount that he needed, but right. There's a lot of other guys in that same class.
Gotcha.
The thing that's going good for Yonda is that he's played in the PFF era. So there's a lot of information about just how good Yonda's been. So that's positive. The negative is that compared to players from previous eras who had more Pro Bowls often, the writers didn't know enough to change their evaluation of who the best lineman was and change their Pro Bowl vote quicker.
Gotcha.
So he's behind some other players in terms of Pro Bowl.
Right.
And it's also a question of whether Yonda will be a first ballot Hall of Famer or not. So he has led this offense from in front in a lot of ways this year in terms of Lamar is certainly the face of the offense, but Lamar defers to Yonda an amazing amount. On the 4th-and-2 play, he's, hell yeah, coach, I want to go for it. Then he turns to Yonda and says, you want to go for it, right? And, you know, that's what I love. And both of them are leaders in that sense. So I really love to see that.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about this offense overall, because Sean McVay after the game. They were asking him, like, why can no one stop the Ravens? And he said, well, yeah, there's Lamar's speed that we can't do anything about. We can't even practice against that because it's so different. But it's also the way Lamar runs the offense. What's different about how he's running the offense?
There's certainly a lot of deception involved in this offense. And then some of that was apparent in the post-game comments. Right, Maureen?
Yeah, I heard Weddle say after the game that half the time he didn't know where the ball was. And, you know, I thought Weddle was a great safety.
Yeah, he certainly was. The other thing, you know, he talked about them getting their faces peeled off. It was a very despondent interview from Weddle, or maybe respectful, depending on how you want to think about it. And there was one other comment he made about he didn't know where the ball was, didn't think they would get their, you know, their butts handed to them the way they did. I mean, it was a very point of fact thing. And there's no point evading the truth at this point. In terms of DeVoe, this was the single most dominant performance of the entire season by any team by the Ravens this year. They said it did not crack the top 30 games of all time, but it was the most dominant of this year by a wide margin. The Ravens had 6 TD drives of 48 plus yards. Those are all with Lamar on the field, obviously. They had 5 of 70 plus yards against the Texans, only 4 in this game. They punted one time. Okay, and we talked about Cook. You know, there's all kinds of funny comments going about it as a great hold, and, you know, why don't we cut the punter and save a roster spot and that sort of thing. But the Ravens are now on pace for the fewest punts in NFL history. They had 2 punts per game so far through 11 weeks, 22 punts. They're on pace for 32, fairly obviously. And the Oilers of 1990 had 34. That's the fewest in NFL history. So it'll be interesting to see if they can get that. You know, we'll be happy with the number one seed if it doesn't happen, but San Francisco, Buffalo, and Pittsburgh are games where they could be forced to punt a few times, certainly. So with the other games, for that matter. I mean, you always have a risk of punting. But, San Francisco, Buffalo, and Pittsburgh, Buffalo particularly because of the weather, San Francisco and Pittsburgh because of the good defenses, are games where that punt total might get a little inflated.
And
I think I just think time of possession was also, in favor of the Ravens. And it's hard for the other team to score when you don't give them the ball. And they had only a 3-and-out in the third quarter.
Right. Yeah, that's right. They only you were doing the defensive plays. We noted that, right? There were only 3 plays. For the game, the Ravens had 74 offensive snaps and the Rams had 48. And time of possession was almost exactly 40 minutes to 20. 39:56 for the Ravens, 20.04 for the Rams. So that's about as one-sided as I've ever seen it.
Well, and it makes you wonder how those stats would have been if the Ravens didn't pull everyone for the fourth quarter.
Yeah, you know, it is something we keep seeing is Lamar keeps getting taken off the field, right, which is the right call, by the way. We want a fewer hits on Lamar. Any way we can get him is the way to go.
Got to stay healthy.
But it's also, you know, maybe this is good for RG3 to get a little bit of playing time in season against live fire to be ready were the unthinkable to happen. Because it might happen in the playoffs at some point, and then RG3 might all of a sudden be starting a Super Bowl for us at some point if you can get through the remainder of the game before it.
Let's not even think about that.
Let's not. What I will say is I just can't express my pleasure over the whole Lamar Jackson era any more than to say I still don't know what characteristics a defense needs to stop him. It's been all this time. He's 14-3 as a starter. He's lost 2 games at Kansas City. He's lost the playoff game to the Chargers. He lost the 1 game to the Browns, which nobody's going to have an explanation for. But, you know, we don't have any idea what is the method to stop this guy at this point. And make no mistake, it's him who's driving this offense. It's his elusiveness that's doing it.
And even as Raven fans, we've never been in this position where no matter who the opponent is right now, we don't feel like we can be beat because we don't know the weakness.
Yeah.
We haven't seen anything. I know we've already put out the Know Your Foe episode looking toward to this 49ers game. In any other year, we'd be concerned about the 49ers being, 9-1 now?
10-1.
10-1, yep. 10-1, yeah. So.
And a lot of people
Week one, I was concerned about the 49ers, but I have a different perception about the game now.
Right.
Where are you on this, Maury? Yeah.
Well, I think we have a very good chance to beat them, and I like the fact that we're playing at home, and I think the weather will favor us. It looks like it's going to be cold and rainy, and that seems to favor a run game.
Okay, so you're positive on it. I'm a little bit negative on the fact that I think sloppy weather holds down offenses on both sides. It depends how sloppy, but it can be bad for both offenses. We've certainly seen that in the Dallas-New England game this last weekend where a cold, rainy game really depressed offenses on both sides, I thought.
Well, so anyway, that and phantom tripping plays, tripping calls.
Yes, that'll do it too.
But it's interesting even to see the national coverage of this game. They're not setting this up as the next big test for the Ravens, like every other game has been for the past 4 weeks. They're calling it a Super Bowl preview.
That's right. It's almost, in some senses, it's almost like an exhibition game for a preview to the Super Bowl. As if you played a little scrimmage the week before the Super Bowl, if people think of it. And I do want to caution Ravens fans here. If you were here for the pain of 2006, you know not to get ahead of yourself at this point in the season. It looks like the Ravens are going to get a bye, probably a 90% chance at this point they end up with a bye. That means they're going to be home for that first game. They easily, and did, unfortunately, in 2006, lose to a team that was probably not as good as them, the Indianapolis Colts, in that divisional game. And to this moment, that is still my worst, most despondent post-game feeling I've ever had, was losing that football game.
I just blocked it from memory.
That's a good job. That's a good job. I keep thinking about that day where I was supposed to go over to Edgar's and meet some people from work. And I can't inflict myself upon them at that point after how I felt after that game. I just had to go home
So that was a bigger loss for you than even Cundiff kicking it off the field goal, than the dropped balls in the end zone.
Yeah, that's the same game, but right. Yes, that was horrible. But that was very close to the Super Bowl, so in a sense that was worth. But that the 2011 team was good, but it was not quite as good as the 2006 team. And so the 2006 team, it really looked like the Ravens had a fairly clear path to the Super Bowl. They were going to play the AFC Championship at home, and they lost that opportunity. And then, of course, it ended up being – who did it end up being? Yeah, the Colts ended up going to the Super Bowl and beating the Bears, right? Yeah, they beat the Bears in that one.
All right, well, let's get back to the 2019 Ravens because this game started out with, it seemed like the only guy Lamar was targeting was Marquise Brown. But then it ended up opening up that everyone was catching the ball, not tight ends for a while, but Roberts was getting involved and Snead was getting involved. Boykin even had a couple catches.
Yeah, he did. And Boykin, two huge conversions in this game, a 15-yard completion on 4th and 4. I love the way he just kind of turtled up over the football. He could have gone to the ground. I'd have been fine with that. But if you're going to turtle up on the football and you're stood up, you may as well go to the ground. What was great to see, and Baldinger played this video back and forth, and, he sees Ramsey shaking his head, and just everybody on the Rams is so despondent with the Ravens' demoralizing ability to convert at will on 3rd and 4th down. They just could not stop them. And then, of course, later with RG3 in the game, Boykin caught that 39-yard pass down the left sideline, which is just a thing of beauty, going high up for the football as if he's the defender almost, because that defensive back was perfectly positioned to make the pick behind him, but he snatched it away from him for essentially an interception for the offense. And then he came down, and how did we know he was inbounds, Maureen?
His butt touched.
His inbounds. So one butt inbounds was good enough in there. All right. You mentioned Roberts. He caught 3 of 4 targets, all for big conversions, 3rd and 6, 2nd and 9, 3rd and 9. Those are all high-value conversions. They are obviously both the 3rd downs are, but a 2nd and 9 is also a great conversion. Snead on both TD catches. He beat a safety across the face on a play where Orlovsky pointed out that he was really picked out by Jackson to get the ball from the snap based on the leverage he had. Did a great job of taking advantage of that. And then the other time he beat the corner to the pylon after he caught the ball at about the 4 or 5 yard line and made a move, got to the outside, dove for the pylon and was in. So outstanding game for Snead, who's been kind of a forgotten man after a big year last year with Lamar in that second half.
And Hollywood seemed to have more snaps than he had recently.
Yeah, that's true. He was up to 49 snaps in this game. He really should have had three TDs. He dropped the ball at the goal line, but that touchdown went to somebody else. I'm not sure who, whether it was Snead or to who might have gotten it. But anyway, he dropped a pass right at the goal line. Otherwise, caught 5 out of 6, though. He was perfectly splitting the defense on those touchdown passes, which were both beautiful. So just a shame he didn't catch that third one. But nice to see him get thrown to 6 times, catch 5, be in there for a lot of plays. You know, we even saw a couple of plays where he looked like he's trying to throw a block. And Marquise Brown is outweighed by your typical cornerback by 20 or 25 pounds, maybe more. And if it's a safety, it might be 35 pounds. So he's really a smallish guy compared to everyone else on the field. And so to see him even try and make a run block is kind of nice.
Yeah, I noticed how small he is, and got to figure that part of that is with his injury, he wasn't able to put on the weight this offseason that we might see in the next year as he grows to in order to compete with these NFL-sized guys.
Yeah, I would expect him to gain muscle. I don't expect his frame to increase too much in size, but just some muscle in the arms would be nice to make sure he can wrest the ball from defenders. You know, obviously he's got to keep his legs tuned up to get the speed he has, but yeah, I guess everybody fills out at the NFL level a little bit. They're kids, you know, when right. They get drafted.
Yeah. I mean, you got to get used to running that pace at the NFL level and then being able to keep on the weight. How about the tight ends? Did the Rams come at this trying to shut down our tight ends, or why were they quiet?
Yeah, they had only 3 of 5 for 52 to the tight ends in this game. So they did have one big pass to Andrews, which went for 38 yards. And, hey, anytime you only have to throw 5 targets to get 52 yards, that's terrific production. But what I would say is...
Did that include the 15-yard tack-on?
No, it did not. And Andrews had that. Was that on a shorter play or on 38? That was on a shorter play. But that's a good point. That's another 15 yards that they got out of that. But what I would say is that the Rams are talented in the middle of the field and talented at playing zone defense. So their two guys are not like the Ravens' two inside linebackers. They have a safety, Taylor Rapp, who effectively plays the dime back on most snaps. And they have Corey Littleton, who's a talented coverage linebacker playing in the middle of the field also. And they did a better job of shutting down plays behind them than the Ravens' inside linebackers, frankly, early in the year did. We didn't see Kenny Young in this game. I don't know if he was active or not, or if he might have been where he might have been for this game.
I saw him get one tackle on special teams.
Okay.
So because I heard his name announced once at least. So he was in there.
All right, very good. Anybody else? Maureen, anybody else you want to talk about?
I think we covered it.
Only people right. We didn't cover was Mark Ingram and Gus Edwards and the running game.
You know, great to see Ingram have another big game here. He certainly is doing very well. Didn't have a big game as a receiver. We saw a friend of ours out there had a big bet on Ingram to have 60 receiving yards, where he's going to collect a lot of money if that had happened. Unfortunately, that didn't come through for him. I think he won enough on the game itself to be comfortable with what happened. But anyway, Ingram, one reception for 7 yards. It was a touchdown. That was nice. But he also ran the ball very effectively, 15 times for a 111, which is a 7.4 average. He had one big breakaway for 25 yards. He had a couple others that were 10-plus. You know, really nice game for Ingram, who just continues to be the bell cow for this team. My understanding is I've seen a little bit of video. I'm not sure which game it was from, but it might have been the Rams game, where Ingram is pacing the sidelines. And he obviously wants a career in TV after he's done. But they had him mic'd up, and he's got like stopping by every player and like kind of calling him by his nickname to see if he can get a reaction out of them. And it's one of those kind of interesting things that I guess you can do in a game where you've got the score run up. But the other players must have figured out that he was mic'd up, and they were clamming up against him. Didn't want to give him anything to incriminate themselves.
Yeah, the sideline, especially during the fourth quarter, was a whole lot of fun for the Ravens. Is that even John Harbaugh was getting into cheering on the crowd?
There you go. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was definitely a thinned out crowd at that point, wouldn't you say, Maureen? In terms of who was there between Rams and Ravens fans?
Yeah, we got a seat on the light rail on the way back.
So an indication that everybody else had left on a previous train.
Well, it makes sense. If I was a Rams fan, I'd stay around to watch Lamar Jackson. But once he leaves, okay, it's time to go home. I saw the
show. We saw people leave in the third quarter, and generally fans don't leave that early.
There's a kind of a big thing that they did out there, which was any celebrity that they noticed in the crowd, they want to get a camera on them. So who was it? Is Kylie Jenner? Is that the one? Or is it someone?
Kylie Jenner, and it was another Jenner.
Okay. And there's some rapper also was there.
Yeah, some rapper, DJ Mustard. I don't know who that is.
All right. Anyway, any celebrity.
But they failed to put the camera on Michael Phelps.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's one they should recognize, you would think. But all right. So the Ravens, when you look at anyone's power polls right now that are out, power rankings, outside of ESPN, everyone else is putting the Ravens at the top. So Ravens, you mentioned they have a good chance of getting a bye. How are things looking for them going up with New England?
Well, I don't think the Ravens need to fear New England. I think they've beaten them once. I think they certainly have taken advantage of New England's lack of speed on the second and third levels, or even on the first level as well, to contain or to deal with the tight ends. And so they've done what they need to do to beat a team like New England. I think defensively they match up pretty well against what the Patriots have to offer at this point in terms of receivers and a lot of point was made on the New England game that they don't really have a tight end currently.
Right.
They've Ben Watson is their big threat at 38 years old.
Right. But do you think having that home field with the Patriots, is that a big deal that we get that first slot?
It's a big deal. It's probably worth 6 points in terms of the expectation in the game. So at New England, as it stands right now, they'd probably be a small underdog. At home, they might be about 4.5 point favorites. So it might be as much as, say, a 20 percentage point difference chance to win the game. So maybe it's 45 if they play there and it's 65 at home.
All right. So we're still at the point as when the Ravens get, while you're watching the Ravens game, also keep an eye on the New England game, or I think they play Sunday night this week, so that'll be something to stay up and watch as Raven fans.
Yeah, there you go. Definitely want to keep our eyes on that. And it's one period point of time where we're happy that New England constantly is being flexed into prime time or into the 4:25 game, so we can watch it after we're done with the Ravens game.
Right, right. Yeah, even if it's ugly and in the rain and has fake penalties. Yeah. Let's get to your MVPs for the week.
All right, I'll just go through quickly 3-1 here. Maureen, you can play along if you like. Are you good? Or you want you?
No, I didn't prepare for this.
Okay, no problem. Okay, number three, I'll go with Mark Ingram. Obviously, a big game rushing the ball. There are a lot of people in contention for this on offense, but he gets my number three. My number two goes to Marquise Brown, 5 or 6 catches, 2 touchdowns. He gets it despite the drop, but it's really nice to see him getting more playing time than he had been early in the year. And then number one, there's just no question about it, the offensive player of the week in the AFC, Lamar Jackson. Another spectacular game on a run that is just magical in every way. I mean, 1975 Burt Jones is the last time a Ravens team and a Ravens quarterback have been aligned in this way for this kind of magical run. That 75 Colts team was 1-4. They won their last 9 to win the division, including the big fog game win against Miami with a week to go. And they went to the playoffs and they got destroyed by Pittsburgh in what was frankly a close game until midway through the fourth quarter when they lost it. But we haven't had that. We haven't had what we have with Lamar since then. So that's 44 years ago. And I just want people to appreciate this. It doesn't come along very often. If you're my age, it probably won't come along again during your lifetime. So appreciate having the hot quarterback in the NFL and the really magical ride going on like it is now. How are we doing for mailbag?
Yeah, let's get a couple mailbag questions in as we're wrapping up. This is where you get to steer the show, getting your questions using the hashtag FilmStudyMailbag over on Twitter. First one up is Minion Hunter, who's wondering how important is the first 15 scripted plays for this offense. So that first drive that's planned out, how important is that? Because that's been very successful so far.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say lately because they've been scoring at will whenever Lamar's in the game. And, I had a little thing written down on the page here. This game, the Lamar drives were touchdown, 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 touchdown. So you can probably remember that one without even writing it down. Against Houston, it was missed field goal, fake field goal, so lost the ball on downs, touchdown, touchdown, end of half, touchdown, field goal, touchdown. Against Cincinnati, it was touchdown, 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 end of half, again by Neil Downs, touchdown, touchdown. So there haven't been any failed Lamar drives at any point during the game. So my point about the scripted plays is they've certainly gone well. They've resulted in touchdowns, but they have. There's nothing to differentiate that from everything else that's going on the rest of the game.
All right. Let's get to Brad's question. I'm going to make you get out of your comfort zone a little bit because you like to look at the offensive line as individuals. But as a whole, how is this offense playing compared to previous years? It sure looks like they're playing well above what we're used to.
Okay, so we're seeing the offensive line.
The offensive line as a whole, yes.
Yeah. This is one of the two greatest three greatest offensive lines the Ravens have ever had. The big ones were 2008 and 2009, and each of those was a little bit different, but they had a lot of quality. And when you go left to right, you see just, boy, that's a lot of quality. The 2008 offensive line had Jared Gaither at left tackle, who for 2 years in there and on both those lines was a terrific left tackle. Then the 2008 team had Grubbs at guard, who was good but young and less consistent in that year. Burke at center, who was one of the best players in the entire league. I'm sorry, that was still Brown at center in 2008. And he was good also, though, and signed a big contract with the Rams after that. Yanda only won the position in mid-2008 from Chris Chester, but he played absolutely fabulously down the stretch. And then at right tackle, they had Willie Anderson, who was slow-moving but extremely good still at that point, always graded very highly as we scored the games. The next year, they had some personnel turnover, but they still had Gaither at left tackle, who was outstanding. Grubbs, a year later, was better. Burke at center came in and took over, and by PFF was one of the best players in the entire league. They had him rated that year as the 22nd best player in the entire league, which frankly might have been overdoing it, but he certainly had a great year. Yanda played the entire season then in 2009 at right guard, and they had the rookie Michael Orr, the first round pick, who came in and had the only really good year he had of his career, the only really good year. His career was more or less a ski slope from that point forward as the Ravens moved him around from position to position. So it's those two lines along with the current offensive line are the three best. All the other years they had various problems with missing pieces or injuries or other problems that they just couldn't get through the season with a consistent group. But this offensive line, until Skura's injury, really looked at least on par with the 08 and 09 lines.
All right. 49ers this weekend are making the news is at least making a big deal that they're using their wide receiver, Richie James, as their scout QB for the week, trying to prepare for Lamar. Is that the 49ers just not even worrying about Lamar passing the ball and just focusing on his speed to try to control that?
Yeah, I think that's true, Josh. I think what I heard from the 49ers expert on the Know Your Foe, and by the way, I'd highly recommend that. Oscar Aparicio is on the show with me.
And no relation to Nestor, right?
No relation, so you can listen.
All right,
it's okay.
Good. All right.
He's an excellent analyst, and what he said is he thinks that the 49ers are likely to try and force Lamar to hand the ball off by respecting the read option route he would take, as opposed to even trying to go after the running back. So allow the ball to be handed off on the inside, or if it's on the outside, and contain Lamar alternatively, and then see how that works out. Now, the way Lamar can beat that, or the way that Roman can beat it by design, is to have a lot of the runs going to the outside naturally with the running back, because then it becomes harder to give up on that, and Lamar then has to take the inside track to make a move up the field. So I don't think there's any one way to beat Lamar. And that's the funny thing, is we really haven't seen how it's been done. So they'll try something that will be as effective as they think they can be to try and stop him. And maybe it'll work this week, maybe it won't. But we haven't yet found that combination that has shut down the Ravens offense.
And as a Ravens fan, I'm even looking for that. I want to see a team slow him down on something and force the Ravens to kind of change what they're doing and see how they adjust, because it's weird that we haven't seen that yet, that whatever the Ravens plan works.
Yeah, they've made good adjustments. This team has last year, and even in the playoff game would be a place where they made good adjustments to just put the ball in Lamar's hand in the fourth quarter, and he almost brought him back in that game. they've made other adjustments at other times during last year to pull out games that were, you know, look like they might be a problem. There hasn't been a need for anything in the way of adjustments this year. You're right. But I don't need a failure manufactured to let that happen. I think the chance of discovering is actually a small danger to the Ravens if they somehow figure out how to beat Lamar 2019 before the playoffs.
So I guess you wouldn't like my suggestion of letting RG3 play the first quarter so we can see how Lamar does on a comeback.
No, I don't think that'd be wise.
All right, let's get in the plugs. Everything's over on filmstudybaltimore.com. You got the offensive breakdown up there now and multiple shorts and a Know Your Foe that's already out.
All kinds of good stuff out there. The Know Your Foe already out. I haven't promoted that yet. Thanks for reminding me about that, Josh. Really worth the listen. Outstanding guest. We've had four in a row, just outstanding guests on the Know Your Foe series. But anyway, take a listen to that. The defensive article is up. The offensive line article will be up tomorrow some point with the scoring by player. I know a lot of people look for that. And then both podcasts should be up for Thanksgiving commuting tomorrow, right?
Yeah, you keep saying Thanksgiving commuting. I'm going more with the if you want one earbud in while you're at the Thanksgiving meal with your family. This will also get you through all that political discussion and stuff that you want nothing to do with.
That's true. So you have to love your family, but a lot of us don't like our family anyway. And when you're in that environment where you're with your family and it's just too much, the drama is getting there, the politics are getting there, reach for the earbuds and a nice film study podcast.
Yeah, you have to look like you're listening and not actually listen. You just have to stay focused. If a beanie covers your ears at the table, no one knows why. It's cold. It's Baltimore. I'm sure it's not 80 degrees like I'm dealing with down here in Florida for Thanksgiving.
All right. Well, how's your Thanksgiving plan going, Josh? Who are you spending it with?
We're not doing anything. We're real laid back. Immediate family right here at home. First Thanksgiving kind of out of Maryland, so we're taking it easy. Plus, our house finally sold today in Maryland. So
congratulations.
So we're kind of just having a big dinner to celebrate that and we're very thankful about that.
That's great news. I'm so happy for you.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, Ken, we'll talk soon because we still got to break down the defense tonight. And everyone else, make sure you're getting all these 5 episodes of podcasts for you this week. Make sure you're downloading them all. Make sure you're telling your friends. And make sure you're going online and giving reviews and spreading the word.
Winning comes in all shapes and sizes. Every day there's an opportunity for a win, just like scratchers from the Virginia Lottery. Every day grab and go, every day giftable, every day fun. It's where anticipation meets instant gratification, and they're satisfying to scratch no matter the outcome. Like the new Virginia Lottery Scratcher Colossal Cash. It's loaded with $100 to $500 prizes. Now that's an everyday win. Drive to the nearest Virginia Lottery retail location and pick up a scratcher today. Odds of winning any prize, 1 in 3.21.
Introducing the Lowe's List for Innovation. While our aisles are filled with innovative products, we've selected our favorites just for you. Like the exclusive Whirlpool washer with industry-first 2-in-1 removable agitator. We love this washer because you can customize any load. And with other smart features to streamline your laundry routine, this product is a must-have for families. Shop the full Lowe's List of top picks at Lowe's.com. Lowe's, home to any budget, home to any possibility. U.S. only.